We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dane Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Pods. Today's show is part two of my Wolves season preview here with Britt Robson. We're splitting this preview up into three parts. So if you're looking for our thoughts on the guards, that was in part one. We did D'Angelo Russell, Patrick Beverley, Jordan McLaughlin, Leandro Bolmaro, Jalen Noel, and we almost talked about McKinley Wright. So that's one episode back in your feed. And on today's show, we're going to be doing the wings, which I've decided are Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, Malik Beasley, Taurean Prince, and Jake Layman. Before we get into that, Britt, do you have any problem with any of those five players being labeled as wings? McDaniels, Beasley, Prince
is, I would not say I have a problem with that because I do think that, you know, you're the one that's fixated on the power forward position as being a morass of weirdness, and I can't really disagree with that. And as a result, who you choose
as kind of my general view of the Timberwolves.
who you judge to be a quote unquote big, which means somebody who has kind of rim protection responsibility versus a wing, which is somebody who has perimeter responsibility that isn't strictly a stretch four. That's where I would say Prince is really a straddle there. When I asked Finch directly last night where he envisioned Prince, he said where he's been all preseason, between a three and a four. So is he a wing? Yes. Is he a big? Yeah, a little less so, but yes.
Yeah, I think that's the fair one for a point of contention. Jaden McDaniels, maybe, because we definitely had part of this. I'm putting him in the wings here. We definitely had part of the summer.
You know, if at the very least, it's wishful thinking. And I wishfully think it. So
I'm wishfully thinking he can be a power four.
No, I wishfully think he's a three. He's in the wings, isn't he?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I mean. Yeah, that's a three.
It's just a place where
people... I wishfully don't mind talking about him here, even though he may wind up being a big in terms of minutes.
I don't think
he
will.
Finch says, you are who you guard, and you know that means he's a one through five.
Well, so I think this is a good way to view it. Is Queen of the Glass, their tracking data determines positions.
And by the way, for those who don't know the website, that is the breakdown here. The bigs, wings, guards is their configuration.
Yes, true. And they also do go by position as well.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, they have like general.
Have they started to do that? I didn't. Yeah, if I maybe haven't been there in a while.
Yeah, but they have both.
Okay.
Different ways to do it. But they have last season that Jaden McDaniels played 58% of his minutes at small forward, 38% of his minutes at power forward, and 4% of his minutes at shooting guard.
I think that's probably true.
I think that is probably true, too.
I think it will skew a little more for this year, unfortunately.
Well, another person left off this wings list that people will probably have some problem with is Josh Okogie. But according to Cleaning the Glass, he had 60% of his minutes at power forward and 40% of his minutes at small forward last season.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my view.
I was saving the Okogie argument for when we talk about
right. It is all a morass, and it's not something that you, I, or anybody should get all too caught up on what position these guys do play. I just wanted to say that actually when I sent you this maybe a week ago or something,
right?
I put McDaniels in the bigs part, and I have since changed him in my analysis.
Did I have an opinion? I think I made one.
I think you literally just argued the opposite both times.
I'm glad I said that. Oh, I wanted McDaniels to be a big?
Yeah. Well, and okay. Now you want it the other way. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Because I am. It's the difference between wishful thinking and reality, right, in my view.
And we've seen him. I think we've seen him play a lot more. I guarded James Harden last night.
He played well last night.
He did. He did, which is really his first good game.
First good defensive game. Mm-hmm. Really good defensive game. Offensively, he was terrible first two games.
Let's start with him. Let's skip over Ant right. and then go yeah. and then, right. and then go with McDaniels. Where are you at in your head? Not specific to position.
Concerned.
Okay.
He's very young, and he had a great breakout year, in my opinion, last year, his rookie season. Way exceeded expectations, to the point where I stupidly said I'd take him over Ant long term. In the middle of last year.
I almost forgot about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I always like to bring up my mistakes. It was a mistake because Ann is the better prospect. But McDaniels, my point back then was that McDaniels has a skill that we know will be there, and that is defense. He is going to be a quality defender. My concern is that they want desperately to play him with Karl Anthony Towns, and they want it to be a 4-5 situation, and it is not going to work. Well, whoever is in control of the brass, I mean, it used to be I thought it was a Roses thing, and then I thought it was a Finch thing, then I thought it was a Finch thing, and I imagine now it's a Finch and Gupta thing.
Yeah, but
I do think that they need a plan B. Because Cat and McDaniels are both.
I'll be pretty surprised once.
If they go 4-5?
Well, no, I'm looking even more into the future. If we talk about post trade deadline or like at the trade deadline or next offseason, if Gupta with Finch influence continues to pursue McDaniels as a legitimate power forward option.
Yeah, I think I will be surprised too, but it's still the fact of the matter is they're pursuing a strategy that
pursuing it. They had nothing to do with that strategy.
Well, their default strategy is wrong decision.
Sure. Yeah, I know, but
I would rather have Torian Prince at the 4 than Jaden McDaniels. I'd much rather have Vando at the 4 even though he plays better with Nas. Next to Cat. Cat needs a bruiser. Right. McDaniels is many things, but bruiser is not one of them.
So we're operating within reality. That's fair. Of what the team is. I just think the team was put together by Gerson Rosas, not Sasha and Gupta. Mm-hmm. And it is now Finch's job to coach the team as he has here. And so yeah, the reason he hasn't named a power forward is because he doesn't have one. He doesn't know what he should do there. And probably the reality of the situation, he's going to have to play guess and check. And at times, he's going to play McDaniels at the 4, probably against smaller teams. Maybe against Houston in the opener when they go like Tice, Christian Wood.
You're right.
Front court.
He'd be good on Christian Wood.
He would be, yeah. So I think
it's who you guard.
Get time. Exactly. But I don't think it continues to be the future of how this team will be built.
I agree.
With McDaniels as a 4.
We have an entire pivotal season to think about it unless they do something either off the waiver wire right at the end of preseason or during the trading deadline or whatever.
Right. Or Ben Simmons. By the way,
do we want to make that brief detour?
Sure.
Okay. The word from Clutch, according to a couple of writers I respect, is that they want Ben Simmons not to be hidden on offense. They want him to be featured, which is idiocy. It's so absurd.
That's how I would use Ben Simmons.
Huh?
I would feature him.
You would have him be like a 35% usage guy?
I mean, maybe not 35. No,
Harden-esque?
No, I would use him like Giannis. That would be the best example of how I would say I would use Ben Simmons.
Okay, well,
I'm not saying he's as good as Giannis, but I think the team I've always thought would be a good
team. What would happen if Giannis totally crumbled confidence-wise?
Sure, I don't know if that means it's going to work. You could say his confidence crumbles even more if you put Simmons in the dunker spot or if you have somebody else do all this and that. I'm just saying if it were me, I think he's going to be your best or one of your best players on your team and you build around him that way. I think Washington would be a good spot for him where you surround him with shooters, assuming Bradley Beal would be like out in that situation. Right. Maybe because Ben Simmons is is a full level below Giannis or maybe two levels below Giannis, maybe that team has a pretty low ceiling to it. I don't know. It's just, I don't think it's going to work to play him off ball, which is maybe a reason why he would never work in Minnesota or be. I think it'd be tougher to see.
Whatever I like him as a point forward. And I don't think Giannis is a point forward. I think Giannis is more of a
I feel like we're doing the thing where we're saying the same thing again, but arguing.
Okay. Well, I mean, I just think that Giannis doesn't get dimes very much.
Sure. I'm more saying like the spreading out the floor around him, hammer and nail at the rim over like that is your go-to setup of your offense. Or sometimes, Giannis is used as a screener too. Simmons would need to sometimes be used as a screener. That's how I would use him. I don't know if that, how that would fit into the Timberwolves context. I don't know how that would fit into a lot of teams' context, but a lot of teams around the league would be envious of that low ceiling that we just talked about.
I'm a Simmons guy in terms of him as an overall player.
Sure.
I do not want Ben Simmons as the feature piece in my offense. I just don't want it. I don't think that that's a good idea because I think that when your mind has been stained to the degree his mind has been stained, it takes either a long time or never for
I just that don't think we can know how much stain. I don't think you or I know.
I think we can know that Ben Simmons is not going to be your Herculean score for quite some time.
I agree with that. I think stain and that he's broken and all those things.
I don't think he's broken. I think he's stained. I think there's a big difference. I think he will always be a great defender.
Yeah.
I think that if somebody has a stain on their forehead, that doesn't mean they can't run. I think that the stain is pertaining to exactly where the stain is.
Right.
And for Simmons, the stain is getting big buckets.
Sure.
I don't think he can get big buckets for a while.
What do you think it'll be like if the Timberwolves trade for Ben Simmons 13 games into the season the same way that the Sixers
I'll be very discouraged.
Yeah.
I think bad timing. Here we go again. We have the excuses of why we need to run it back in 22, 23 with this new exciting cast that's yet another shift. We won't have McDaniels around. Who knows whether we'll have D'Lo or whoever else is in the churn. But to me, it postpones rebuilding by a year if that's what they're going to do.
So
my patience has run out.
Yeah, your desire for that trade has gone down, and I think the likelihood that the Timberwolves will get Ben Simmons has gone up. Since when you, John, and I talked in Vegas, I think, I don't know, we each went around, we said like 6-8%, something like that. I'm not saying I know that a ton has happened on the Wolves front. I'm just saying how things have transpired in those 2 months since Summer League, right? Philadelphia has lost more leverage in the situation, thus making the likelihood.
Although some would argue that recent events have shown that their leverage has gotten a foothold at the very least.
I don't know. I'm also have totally checked out from the idea. Like for me in my analysis, I haven't talked about Ben Simmons.
It's better not to engage the thought. but I do
it's like a drug.
as good as Ben Simmons is defensively, and as much as I like him as a player.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, your comp is Giannis. Mine, in some weird ways, is Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert is effective until he isn't. And when he isn't, he kills your team. Mm-hmm. And I think that's Ben Simmons right now. If you rely on Ben Simmons to do certain things that he can't do, you're screwed. And that's a dicey thing when a guy is getting an enormous amount of money for a long time.
Total risk. There's totally a risk to it. And I think, yeah, to the Timberwolves extent, I think that's fair why people have started to check out from it, or maybe just want it less. Maybe even be willing to give up less now than they would have a month, 2 months
and
ago.
I'll reevaluate with an open mind if they get him, because I, like I said, I really like him as a player, and I have faith in Finch to, you know, to maximize whatever is there for him offensively. I don't see how he fits with D'Lo,
right.
First of all. That's just weird redundance. And I don't see how he fits with Cat necessarily unless D'Lo is gone. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I still remain very intrigued by Simmons, Cat, and Ant as a threesome. That's a pretty interesting threesome.
Sure.
Because he will help Cat more than he'll help anybody.
For sure.
Cat will no longer have more than one person he has to worry about coming at him in the paint.
Mm.
That's a great, great thing for Cat.
Yeah, so, no, it's...
Defense, it's nothing but positive.
Right.
But you have that other part, and you also have the fact that he's been through a war this last 3 or 4 months, you know.
Yeah.
And so to come to the Minnesota Timberwolves, if they start to lose immediately while he's there, he'll want out.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I guess it's the same.
Imagine him with the Sacramento Kings. Same scenario, according to like the.
Right.
I just think there's so much we don't know.
Big picture
view of the NBA.
I just think there's so much we don't know, and so many things we jump to of stains, of brokenness, of wanting to leave, of this and that.
He's not broken.
Not to put those words in your mouth, but into other people's mouths, they for sure said that. And I think we don't know that much about players. I don't think we know that much about.
That's right. What they really think.
Aside from
Kyrie Irving.
that has become abundantly clear. Okay. So back to the Wings.
Little 10-minute detour. Yeah. I told you weren't going to get 30 minutes out of this.
Yeah, well.
Good, you know, 40, 50.
Hey, it's your house. McDaniels. So the biggest question I have with him is, where is his shooting going to be this season? I think.
Hot and cold.
Yeah. But isn't that kind of where that kind of shakes out and or how consistent it is? Isn't that going to be a pretty big indicator of whether he's truly a two-way player or not?
I think he's still very young.
Yeah.
And so I think if you're counting on him to be the poor man Scottie Pippen that Chris Finch imagines, you're jumping the gun. I have faith that he will battle through what I think will be inevitable ups and downs. I would not have been so confident that those ups and downs were inevitable until this preseason, where I did see him. I think he's struggling. I think it's too much expectations on him, quite frankly.
Do you feel like you're overrating preseason at all?
No, because it's a prove it season, and there's a lot in flux. It isn't like a lot of preseasons I've seen where the Wolves, everybody kind of knows what's going on, and they're just waiting for things to happen.
Mm.
Whole new offense, whole new defense, totally discombobulated rotation, new coach, prove it season. If people are lagging in this preseason, they're stupid.
Yeah, I just asked myself that question the other night.
Uh-huh.
As I just felt like I was into my own analysis, putting a lot into it. And you know, it was like, well, maybe like, you turn the dial down a little bit on this or on that, but I think for those reasons that you laid out specifically to the change of scheme and
they need to change and embrace. And if they don't start doing that now,
which you'd say they have, right?
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. The ones who can't are the ones who haven't or whatever, are more unfairly docked than the guy who's just playing himself into shape to get ready for the opener, which is what a lot of teams do that are established teams. I mean, James Harden looked like a bus last night. He's not going to be that way in a month, you know. He'll be a smaller bus, maybe a minivan.
As this whole first half of this podcast is now is detour mode, I'm going to further detour it because I want to actually wanted to bring this up with you, and I don't know. I don't think we'll do another pod before the season starts.
All right.
They play the first three games. They play Houston, who's going to suck.
Uh-huh.
And then the next two games are against the Pelicans.
Mm-hmm. Which I think are is a bad team.
Well, and Zion's out.
Yeah. Well, and Zion may be out for like 5 years.
Yeah, but so I'm just going. Well, yeah. But like
290-pound guy with a bad foot. That's never happened before.
I don't know what my even question is here, really, but like
they could probably be 3-0. Is that what you're asking?
Probably should be. Or those are all at home.
More likely 2-1.
Yeah. More likely, but.
But if they are 3-0, does that hype everybody up? Bahamas wasn't bullshit.
Bahamas wasn't a joke. That's the direct
quote. Is that what it was? Okay.
He turned his head to me and he said, Bahamas wasn't a joke. I don't know. Miami wasn't a joke, whatever it is. Right. But no, I mean, I could see it. And I think Bahamas was a joke. I thought Bahamas was a joke at the time.
Well, if it turned out to be a very bad joke.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I guess this is like, ooh, I'm right. Yeah. If they start 3-0 this time, that will mean more to me because they'll have done it in the midst of change. Not only the front office, which I think is overrated,
right,
what that change, how much impact that has, but they will have done it in the midst of a full-on schematic change. Both ends.
Agreed.
And the way it's being played, the players changing, like Ant has evolved since the last time a lot of these guys were all together. Mm-hmm. You know, just that, I don't know. I do kind of expect them to start 3-0.
But let me ask you a hypothetical question. What is better, an incompatible set system or a compatible unformed system?
Compatible, obviously.
Okay. And so last year, their sets were incompatible on defense especially, a little bit on offense.
But the year before,
he's
there was incompatible.
He's had a full training camp to begin to install a system that the coach, who I have faith in, believes is compatible with the current personnel, I think, with the exception of the power forward position. But even then, he's kind of, way he's playing the at-the-level thing is a, you know, a power forward concession to some extent.
Right. No,
so,
yeah.
So my point is that I do think, also 7 of their first 8 games are at home. I mean, they need...
Right.
To have a good record, because I tweeted this out the other day.
Yeah, the January thing?
They play 3 games at home in January the entire month, the 5th, the 16th, and the 30th.
Yeah.
I mean, beat guys will see each other like we saw each other at the pandemic, for God's sake. I mean, we won't.
I know.
People will show up at the beginning, the
Chris
middle, of the end of the month.
Home.
It's like a landlord coming to get the rent, you know? I mean, it's like. Meanwhile, they play 12 games on the road all over the place in classic, you know, Wolves in the middle of the country fashion.
Right.
So it's a rough month. And it's January. Traveling in January on planes, you always have that worry that things going to go down, bad weather, delays. You get off the plane, it's fucking freezing. I mean, it's a bad mojo to travel in the winter.
Look at this wing segue I'm going to do.
Planes
and wings, man. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to actually talk about the wings on the Timberwolves roster.
Today's show is brought to you by TickPick. Timberwolves basketball is finally back, and there's no need to exhaust yourself searching all over the internet to find Timberwolves tickets anymore, because TickPick, that's TickPick, is the original no-fee ticket site and the only one you'll ever need as your go-to for all NBA tickets. TickPick got rid of all those awful service fees that the other ticket sites charge, which lets them guarantee the best prices on all of their NBA tickets. Don't believe it? If you can find better prices for the same seats on another ticket site, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference in the purchase price. We obviously have the Timberwolves home opener coming up, and the Wolves will be playing at Target Center, so you can use TickPick. They'll have you covered. Obviously, we'll have games all throughout the season. I'll be there at everyone. You can wave to me in the media section. So if you're looking for Timberwolves tickets, visit tickpick.com/Dane Moore, my full name, today, and use the promo code Dane Moore to save $10 on your first order for Timberwolves tickets. That's tickpick.com/Dane Moore.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right. I am back with Britt Robson of Men Post. We are talking about the Wings, or we're going to start doing that now.
We talked about McDaniels.
We did talk about McDaniels.
That's not sure as a wing.
We have Anthony Edwards, who we're going to start with, but also we'll get to Malik Beasley, Torian Prince, and Jake Layman there. Britt, I'm just going to start with Anthony Edwards, and because this deserves to be noted and remembered in any context of talking about Anthony Edwards into this year is just how insanely good he was at the end of last season. Mm-hmm. It gets even better if you like cut it down for the like last 20 of the year, but even say the whole post All-Star break, which is basically the whole Finch era, 24 points per game, 5.3 boards, 3.4 assists, 1.4 steals, 35% from three on heavy volume, 54% from two, 19 total shots per game. One of the highest usage players in the entire league over the end of the season, usage rate of 27.6. Big numbers, high usage, but also efficient. His true shooting percentage was 56.7%.
Which was the glaring stat pre-All-Star game.
Yep.
He had the, Draymond 44. Green, I always say, you know, only Draymond Green had a worse true shooting percentage.
And people who might not really know true shooting percentage, which like I watch football, I don't know any of the advanced metrics, so it's no shade. But true shooting percentage is the best all-in-one metric for shooting.
Right. The three-pointers heavily. It includes free throws, which are smaller, one shot, 1 point, but also higher percentage, and then puts the twos, I think, in a nice place. A guy who hits a lot of mid-ranges doesn't hurt his true shooting percentage, but does not help it, really. Mm-hmm. If you hit threes and hit free throws, your true shooting percentage will be higher than most people imagine.
Reason why Cats is always so high, Steph Curry's is always so high. Right. It's a really good representation of your efficiency as a shooter. And league average is about 57% at that, which is what Ant was doing over this time.
On volume at 20 years old.
High volume, exactly. Right. Players who had worse true shooting percentages in the NBA last year post All-Star break. Again, big sample, 30-plus games. Right. James Harden, Colin Sexton, Chris Middleton, CJ McCollum, Paul George, Pascal Siakam, Julius Randle, Nikola Vucevic, John Morant, Russell Westbrook, Anthony Davis. He was playing, Anthony Edwards was playing at a near all-star level.
I agree.
At the end of last season, he comes into this year 2 inches taller, leaner, and most surprisingly, maybe, seems to have taken steps within his basketball IQ and his intellect on the floor from just what we've gathered from talking to the coaches, but also just from watching a few of these games.
Right.
There is, I don't want to call him a cerebral player yet, but more of a cerebral player that we're seeing on the floor now.
Yeah, he may be, you know, the aw shucks guy may be sandbagging us, you know, which would be really fun. If he's just been charming the pants off us while he's really a nerd, it would be kind of fun. You know, I mean, I like the concept of that, even if it isn't true, and it probably isn't true. I mean, he's too authentic as an aw shucks guy
right.
to really think he's not. But what I love is he gave all the credit to his trainer for making him a better defender, because the trainer saying, you got to pay attention to off the ball defense this year,
right,
which is what Finch said. But the guy he's been working out with all the time, you know, heard it and said, hey, let's right, think about this. And then, you know, asked what he was doing. Well, I didn't really work out about it, but I thought about it, you know. And so here you go. He's a better off ball guy.
Really showed up in the first preseason game. I will say it very much trailed off.
Yeah. I mean, it's part of it is I think there is the arrogance of magnificence when it comes to Ant. I think if he knows he can do it and it's a preseason game, there's not quite the burning desire. I think at first game, he wanted to find out if he could do it. That may be optimistic. And I do think he will be embarrassed on defense more than he wants to admit this season, because he's still not a good off-ball defender. But I think
biggest thing is letting guys behind him. Yeah. Once they're behind him and they're no longer within his side eye view of him, they will just cut behind him, and it will lead to bang layups. What he wasn't doing in the first game is he was playing in the gaps. He was playing attentively, seeing his man often in the corner, seeing the ball, reading the passing lanes, getting steals.
Right.
That's why it was so exciting.
He was alert.
Alert.
And I think of Cat. People always say, you know, when Cat races down the floor in transition, people go, well, see, he could do that. So he is going to be doing that now. No. He shows you just enough of that to say he can do that, but he doesn't really do that. So what I worry about with Ant, having just praised him for, you know, being nonchalant about his excellence already, is that he may be a guy who, once he says he can do it, say, all right, I'm fine with it. Now I won't do it so much. And that will be too bad, because...
you know what's interesting to me? I talked to Adam Mares, who covers the Nuggets, and we talked a lot of things, Wolves Nuggets, but one thing at the end, I just started asking about the scheme and stuff. And he says what his experience is watching Denver do this much more aggressive defensive scheme is it works really well at the beginning of the year, and it works really well at the end of the year. Because at the beginning of the year, they're ramped up. You have this energy to go do it. He's like, it's such an exhausting thing to be rotating physically and mentally. Every year in the middle of the year, they get lazy with the winter, that January stretch we're talking about. He goes, it always falls apart like that. But then at the end of the year, they kind of lock back in and they're trying to make their push for the playoffs and that sort of, which weirdly seems to be somewhat similar to what you're describing, with Ant. So he might be a real culprit in that, or
exactly
someone who emboldens all of the,
which is why he
negative.
Needs help. He needs a Pat Bev on the floor with him. He needs a McDaniels on the floor with him, perhaps. And also, I would argue that's one of the reasons why depth is important this year. I like the idea of 12 guys. I know I said to Finch,
I don't
14. And he said, well, maybe. And then the very next day he said, you know, we have 10 and we want it maybe sometimes to get it to 11.
I think it's a bad idea.
I think it's a good idea. I think the idea, first of all, I don't think there's a lot of difference between the seventh man and the 11th man.
Yeah, but
and so as a result,
you go first.
Just go at it. Gab people, get out there and execute the scheme in a hustling manner. And then just sort it out. Injuries will take care of themselves.
Your rationale is for keeping guys fresh.
And also keeping guys engaged. Sure. That's what I'm talking about when we talk about that they can falter in the middle of the season because they don't like to do it, you know?
I think if he tries to go 11 plus deep, you really limit your ability to get to your staggers well in your rotation of your... And I think it's going to be really critical to find that balance of... The obvious step one is one of Cat, D'Lo, and Ant on the floor at all times. That has to happen. But even beyond that, we talk about this all the time. Finch talks about this all the time, of these two player pairings, Beasley and D'Lo, Cat and Vando, whatever it might be, finding those. The more players you add into your rotation, the more total substitutions you make, I think the harder it gets
to find that. So if they're finding that balance,
but it would be easier to avoid Beasley and D'Lo then, which I'm all for.
Yeah, but you got to. But you're also for playing them both 25 plus minutes a game, right? I mean, I don't know. I just will learn a lot more about the rotations. I have some concerns, and maybe just caught up in the moment of watching the rotations be terrible in the preseason, which who cares, but it was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It led to really big lapses in periods of time. We'll see, but I think that could have a real adverse impact on the team by having too many players in rotation. I think you got to pick and choose.
It definitely could, which is why most teams don't do it. And if they do it, they do hockey, which is not what I'm proposing.
Right.
I am proposing a lot of shift and stagger, and I am proposing sometimes it being maybe 11 guys, but a different 11.
I'm with that. You're playing Houston in the first game, right? That's a generally smaller team.
Right.
So maybe your 10 includes J-Mac in that game. But then your next two games are, and they're talking very loosely, but your next two games are against New Orleans. So maybe he's out then and Okogie's in or something along those lines. But constantly trying to get to your 11 or scraping to get some energy from, oh, we're going to put Lehman in now. I don't know. I think that could be dangerous.
No, I agree. I do think, as always, everybody says, well, injuries, and then they forget about it. But injuries are a great determinant of who gets minutes. Pat Bev is injury prone. D'Lo and Kat have both proven to be injury prone in recent years. The way Vando and Okogie play, I can't imagine them suiting up every game. Ant seems like a lock for every game for whatever reason.
Right.
But I do think there are two types of depth. The kind of depth I was talking about a minute ago, which you chafed at, and somewhat legitimately so, is having 14 healthy guys and using most of them, or like 12 of them or 11 of them. And then there's the depth of knowing that next man up is not a stooge. You know, next man up turns out to be somebody who's a legit eighth man or ninth man, even though they're 12th in the roster. You know, so
I think I'm going to save it for the bigs part of our conversation.
Okay, fair enough. So let's keep going with Ant. Are we done with Ant? Well, here's what I'll say about Ant.
Yeah,
I'm worried about his shot selection right now. He's shooting way too many threes and not going to the hole. That I really hope that doesn't continue.
Could that be?
He was 7 of 14 from 2 last night and 1 for
8
from 3 or something ridiculous. I mean, it's
not that this is logical or anything.
Right.
I'm not ruling out Ant doing I'm taking it all easy on offense so as to straight pop at the beginning of the year and be
well, I will be happy if that happens. I do think that
Houdini.
Yeah. Well, fine. I will tell you right now, if Ant drops a three in the first 2 minutes of the game, he will use 40% of his shots from distance at minimum. Mm. And that's a problem.
Yeah. Well, if the first part is true, that is a problem. I don't know. I don't think I have a good idea of I don't think the preseason helped me have a better idea of what Ant is outside of the fact I saw two things from Ant and preseason that stood out to me. One, physically standing next to him.
He's bigger.
That's 100% he's bigger.
Yes.
That's not even.
Yep. And leaner.
Yeah. Which is, it was.
Yeah.
I thought they were blowing smoke with that stuff. And
he can still get to the rim. Yeah. See, that's the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think bigger and leaner makes for a better three-point shooter, quite frankly. It certainly hasn't thus far. Mm-hmm. And so what I chafe at, let's face it, the trend is in the NBA, as players get older, their shot selection moves further and further away from the basket. You've got an elite finisher and a mediocre to perhaps someday pretty good three-point shooter. You may be able to get the same true shooting percentage from distance that you're getting in the paint, but it will not have nearly the same impact on the team and on your own efficiency. When Ant finishes at the rim and forces foul shots, gets the team in the penalty, and opens up the inverse drive and kick Ant to Cat, inverse drive and kick Ant to D'Lo, McDaniel's in the corner. Ant can be a four-assist guy, and three of those dimes can be threes if he plays smart. And that's what I haven't seen that this preseason at all, and it bothers me.
But no, I think that's fair. I think he strikes me as one of those guys who might not just for himself.
I know. No, I agree. He's got his own agenda, and the rest of us can go kick rocks, as he said.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm fascinated to see him play. I'm fascinated to see if he is saving something to be more assertive and more aggressive, how that synergizes with D'Lo and D'Lo's quest for buckets this year and all those sorts. I mean, it is going to be that he's going to be the biggest part of the year. Cat obviously is the best player, but is weirdly like there's not that much like vibration in what, you know, he can or can't do. There's some, which we'll talk about, but who is Ant? Who is second year Ant? I don't know the answer to that yet.
Right.
And it'll be telling to how good this team really is.
It's a high floor, but an incredibly high ceiling. That's the thing. I mean, if he makes his floor, he'll just be pretty good. If he makes his floor, he'll just be pretty good. But if he hits 70% of his ceiling, people are going to be raving. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he makes 90% of his ceiling, then he may make the All-Star team. The guy has a phenomenal ceiling. Mm-hmm. And so I personally don't think he'll make even 70% of a ceiling, because that's a huge ceiling. That's a lot to ask of somebody who's 20 years old. But if it all comes together early, watch out.
I'm going to take the last line, and I'm not going to let you respond to it.
All right.
I think one concern I have about Ant and his shot selection is that shooting jumpers is easier and getting to the rim is harder. And dealing with that as a player, you know, it takes some oomph to it. And I'm curious, I'm curious to see what that is as he grows. Malik Beasley, let's talk about him. He's kind of a weird sort of buried player in all of this. There's obviously been talk. Well, he's had a bizarre offseason. He was in jail for a long time. He's obviously not in as good of shape as he was, but it is really important to note that he had an insanely good shooting year last year.
And thank God he made some shots last night.
Yeah.
I mean, this will be the night before last.
Yeah, the final game.
But essentially, he was knocking down Jays, and then he had that that
the block?
Insane block. It's like...
But that's Malik on defense, man. I've said Malik, good defense to Malik is steals and block, is possession enders. Right. And he's not that bad at those things. He gets deflections.
I've never seen him block a shot like that, though. Yeah. I mean, I think he's made some blocks on the perimeter with guys face up. But yeah, right. I don't know, man. A chase down angle block, that he got it at the pinnacle, too. I mean, that was fun. But I don't expect to see it again. you know, and as somebody who was pro Malik and still, to, you know, I think anybody who can just make shots with his release and especially the position he can get on the run into the corner, that's such a rare skill. You don't see many NBA players on the run twist and hit corner threes without going out of bounds.
It's insane. It's probably my favorite Wolves workout I've ever watched live. Of just one player is him full last year, full court running corner to corner of the floor and getting a pass from a coach in transition, working his feet together to square up for a corner three. That's, if you ever play basketball, that is so difficult to do. Not to mention
really
how windy.
Tiring it, is, I know. Exactly.
And
really
tiring.
And
he's knocking them
shooting all down. Threes on the run
when you're tired
is really hard.
Yeah. And he was great at it last year. 40% from three for the season and almost 9 attempts, 3-point attempts per game. That's really good. 37% from above the break, 48% from the corner last year.
Right.
I didn't realize it was that high.
But he also gave it all back at the other end.
He did, but we're doing positives right now.
All right.
He did a good job of also like creating some in those catch and shoot situations. Yes. He's not just a pure, I'm shooting it here or passing it again.
Right.
Like he generated a lot of offense when he caught the ball pumped and then went as well. If you look at the 107 players who are the highest volume catch and shoot or spot up situation guys, he was fourth in the league in points per possession generated.
Who's ahead of him?
Marcus Morris, Devontae Graham, and Joe Harris. And Morris and Harris were that high because they shot 47.5% from three last year.
Yeah.
Devontae Graham.
And both of them are great. I don't know. Where Devontae Graham. That's why he got all that money.
But it was high volume. So yeah. I don't know. But
I'm not a Devontae Graham fan, but maybe I just haven't watched him enough.
Yeah.
He's one of the reasons I docked
Boyle.
Docked New Orleans.
I watched a lot of Charlotte last year. He didn't look that good, but I don't know. Right. In this situation, he
right.
Numbers say he did well. But I mean that's what you know. That's what you thought you knew you had from Malik.
Right.
He seemed a bit all over the place. I thought that was a baseline, and then we were just left to be concerned about what he's going to be defensively.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I mean, we know he's got to be in shape. He's got to be mentally engaged to do all those things. Is Malik Beasley in shape and mentally engaged? I think that's
right.
A big question here.
And can he escape the washing machine of like positions? I mean,
right.
Rotation numbers 5 through 9. Mm-hmm. I mean, does he have a role on a starting unit that fires on all cylinders? Where does he fit into that? I think he takes shots away, even though he's a great shooter, and even though his true shooting percentage is arguably going to be better than Ant's and D'Lo's, he still may disrupt some rhythm that he doesn't give back on defense at all. Meanwhile, if he's in the second unit, and D'Lo is the chosen starter off the bench, that is such a toxic defensive backcourt that it means that Beverly has to be in the game. There are problems, in other words, with what happens to him. And yet, it's kind of like what I was saying about D'Lo before. You know, you hate his shot selection. The next thing you know, he hits 3 in a row, and boom. There's something about somebody filling it up from deep that Wolves, longtime viewers, and I'm one of the longest, were just not used to remembering the benefits of a guy hitting, going off from deep, changes a game just like that. And he's capable of that. And I just have to rely on Chris Finch to know his tendencies on hot hands and hopefully to disguise him on defense. He made... he's not taking the crazy angles he was taking. I think some of that has to do with scheme now. The scheme is a little bit more disciplined for him, even though it promotes aggressiveness. When he's the low man, he can't be taking those angles, for example. He's got specific assignments. If he can be in the 30th percentile on defense, I'm okay with him getting regular minutes. Mm-hmm. But I don't think he's been in the 30th percentile the two seasons or season and a half we've seen him. Only Wancho was a worse defender on the Wolves statistically, and the eye test was perhaps worse. So
I think an interesting part is that I think he only played like 4 games under Chris Finch
year. That's what Finch told me. Right?
Yeah, and
which gave Finch an excuse to ignore the whole idea of him for a while.
Yeah, and I don't think Chris Finch is putting as much into those numbers I cited at the beginning.
Right.
I think Beasley's going to have to earn.
Totally.
If you want to call it that.
Although I was
spot.
Surprised. You had Beasley. He's had Beasley play like third most in minutes.
I think a lot about
maybe
that
that's
was
just getting him in shape.
Yeah. Taurean Prince and Jake Layman. Let's finish up on them. Prince.
People going in different directions.
Yeah, right. But I think both actually in a pretty good place physically and like mentally.
Jake Layman will, I say this,
of course
I've said it once,
Layman.
I've said it a bunch of times. Jake Layman will turn out to be a surprisingly productive player for another team.
Yeah.
Somebody is going to pick him up for a song and he's going to wind up being a ninth man and a couple people are going to get hurt and he'll have like a month where he'll be a seventh man and play really well.
He's played really well in the training camp time of preseason.
That everybody's raved about him behind the scenes.
Torian Prince, I think everyone has started to rave about since actually having watched him.
Yeah.
There was a pretty real concern when that trade went down that
what
Prince
can he do?
Might just be a dud. Right. The primary motivation of that trade at the time was that they were getting off $5 million.
Yes.
Going down from
signing
Rubio
Bomero. Salary. That was the head of the big Bomero boom.
Bomero opened up room to get Vanderbilt.
Right.
All those things. Like, that's why they cut Rubio's salary for Prince. I don't think they're planning on getting a ton out of him necessarily.
Right.
Hopeful. And I think as we started getting tea leaves along the way of he got a surgery on his ankle.
He sent that message and has continued to send that message. Anybody who talks about Torian Prince, out of town media, whatever, they've learned the ankle story.
Right.
Torian Prince says, don't pay any attention to my last 2 years because I couldn't play. You know, and now I can play. And
early signs
what's cool
are,
is, he's
it doesn't
right.
seem like bullshit. You know?
And my favorite thing about Torian Prince, we have that vantage point of sitting on media row, right, especially in that first preseason game where there were way too many players. So everybody was kind of standing around. But you can get a vibe off players. Torian Prince has a lot of respect among his teammates. Whatever he says, does, the way he behaves. Cat was soliciting, you know, good vibes from him. D'Lo, the ostensible leaders of the team, had a side eye toward Prince's reaction toward things. And Ant, exactly, which is very big. You're right. He just seems like the kind of guy that is a veteran, regardless of how many years he has in the league. He just acts like somebody.
Well, I think that's the big thing. Like, Pat Bev is also a leader on this team, but he's like the OG. He's like 33.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? And right. you got Kat and D'Lo who are 25. So Torian being 27, I believe.
Right.
He is older.
Right.
But he's not that much older.
Right.
You know what I mean? So there's a little bit more that I totally get that sense. Well, I was sitting by you at that one game, but that's the sense I very much get too, that he is a leader, but also a leader amongst peers or something.
Exactly. He's somebody that if all of a sudden he isn't a leader, isn't going to leave a hole. Hmm. But the fact that he is somebody, you go, oh, you know.
It's the difference between Rubio. Rubio was in the Beverly thing.
And Rubio also, if Rubio wasn't a leader, he was toast.
Yeah.
You know, that's what Rubio did after a while.
Yeah, true.
And so, and he knew it. Mm-hmm. And so Prince, it's all gravy. That's my point, is if he doesn't do it, he still can be a stretch four guy who moves well without the ball, is very, very conversant and compatible with the kind of stuff Chris Finch wants to do at both ends of the court. Mm-hmm. You know, he hasn't been a Timberwolf is an easy way to say it.
Right.
You know, he hasn't had the disease. And so the fact that he's healthy and just ecstatic that he's healthy, the fact that he's on a team that doesn't have to cater to Trey Young and everybody else and be an afterthought, and that he's pulling down $13 million. He's like the fifth highest player on the team. And so he's going to shoot between 35 and 40% from three, and he's going to be doing that, I would guess, and I'll probably look stupid at some point saying this, but I bet he makes between 35 and 40% of his threes every month this season. He doesn't strike me as the kind of guy
I agree with that
gets like 22% one month and 47% the next. He's got a stroke and a position, even more than the stroke. When he catches the ball for three, more often than not, he's open because he knows where to go, you know? And he's like, he's not Anthony Tolliver. It's not boom or bust if he can't hit threes. But he is a guy who uses the three a lot. My favorite stat on him when I was looking him up after he got traded, he has exactly as many two-pointers as three-pointers in terms of attempts for his career, you know, which is an interesting way to look at it. He's not a three-point specialist, but he's a frequent three-point shooter.
I think he really is more of a three-point specialist than his stats give off.
Interesting.
In just his game and his ability. I think he took a handful of hard threes a large handful of hard threes in his career that I think dips down his three-point percentage a little bit more. It's ironic. We were talking about Marcus Morris before.
Right.
But like Marcus Morris made 47.5% of his threes last year. 47. And
I don't think he can get there.
I'm not saying that either. But the reason Marcus Morris got that is because he's playing in the corners
right
around Kawhi Leonard and Paul George pick and roll.
Right.
And it's the opportunity and the consistency you're talking about.
But Prince does seem more like a slot guy, doesn't he? Not really above the break, but he's not in the corner.
Yeah, and I think Morris was there too. I don't know right. what exactly those splits are. I'm talking off the top of my head.
That's right.
But I want to say I will not be shocked if Torian Prince has like a 44% 3-point shooting season.
Okay.
It'd
be fun.
It would be fun. It's not a lot. I just think he's, to my eye test for whatever it's worth, he is as good of a pure shooter at this that his team has had. Outside of Cat.
Uh-huh.
But I probably since I've been watching the team.
Well, and again, that speaks well. The other thing, we'll continue to heap good things apparently, but I do think that
Well, we're both high on him.
While I'm undersized, I think he knows how to play defense. I mean, he moves his feet. If he's overwhelmed, then that happens, and he kind of concedes it. He's one of those guys. He's not Kevin Love, but if somebody's going to dunk, he's not going to break his arm on it. You know, right. I mean, you know, it's like if he thinks he has a shot at somebody, he'll defend them. If he doesn't, he'll let them go. You know,
and he just has he has a calm about himself,
very much.
Which then this is
on
learning
an excitable
all this.
Team. All three of the main guys have these kind of weird excitability factors. So yeah, all right. Now the downside is he's not. Great. Well, you think he's potentially a great shooter, but I think he projects as a reliably slightly above average player, which is exactly what he's getting paid to do. And the Wolves need more of those guys, you know.
How is that a downside?
Well, I mean, it's a downside that
can't think of one.
Well, no, I think it's more than
I got a downside.
I don't think his positives don't necessarily add value to the stars on the court.
Okay. I think the spacing might. I think it'll be harder to double Cat. I just want him to not force drives in catch and shoot situations. That's something that stood out to me when I watched his Cav stuff.
Right.
For whatever that's worth, I don't know. I mean, he's playing the Cavs. It's a very different thing.
And I also think that he can be, he's tough to slot reliably in rotation. I mean, Finch will have to use him in terms of his versatility. And I think if you're already having a jumbled rotation, having a guy who may or may not take your minutes that night, might not be great.
This has been the Wings. We're gonna do another episode
on
the bigs. We're done. I think we got all. Yeah, all right. we got all the wings.
All right.
If you missed the guards episode, you can go back one in the feed for that. There's Britt and I doing the same sort of thing, going through D'Angelo Russell, Patrick Beverly, Jordan McLaughlin, Leandro Balmoral, and Jalen Noel. And the next episode that will probably be in your feed at this time, now that you're listening to this, is the Britt and I talking about the picks. Carl Anthony Towns, Jared Vanderbilt, Josh Okogie, Naz Reid, and Nathan Knight. So he's Britt, I'm Dane. Until then, peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like nobody else around, yeah.